Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Run for God Run Club. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do. In His name, amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson. Well, it's always great to hear from someone who has slayed the giant known as the marathon. And we're going to share Reagan Hope's story today. And then I'll ask a burning question, one that I think about often. And now I'm going to put that worm in your head. So joining me once again to discuss this and so much more is Run for God founder Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. How's your week been?
It's been a good week. Not as busy as your week, apparently.
Yeah, we're getting ready to make a move. Oh, yeah. I'm just ready to be done. I'm so ready to be done.
I'm sure.
But it's been good. You know, I think this will be the last time. You know, I come from a building background, and, you know, growing up, my dad's house was always for sale. You know, he thought if he could make a profit, he'll just go build another one. My brother is the same way. His house is always for sale.
Yeah.
I didn't get that gene, I don't think. I built one time 20 years ago, and we'll be done this week with the one that we're building now. And I realize why I only do it once every 20 years. I'm not cut out for the moving and just unsettledness. I'm a creature of habit. And so I'm ready to get back into my habits, good or bad, whatever. I'm just ready to be settled back
there. Yeah.
It's been good.
We've been in our house for 23 years now.
Yeah.
And we'll be there. I almost guarantee we'll be there for another 23.
Sure.
I just can't imagine moving. We just love where we are.
Yeah.
So we're fortunate.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to talk about this thing, too. I had this minor little thing. You and I were talking before we started this about this little minor injury that I've got. And I wanted to bring it up specifically for a reason. It's at the front part of my leg, just above my ankle. And I realized when it started hurting, I realized that it was a soft tissue thing. I knew it wasn't I didn't think it was a big deal. I was pretty sure it wasn't a big deal. But it got to hurting really bad. Of course, it didn't help that I ran 30 miles on it. But it got to hurting really, really bad a few hours after that run. And then overnight, it was really bad. I woke up the next morning, could hardly walk on it. It was really, really rough. And then yesterday, I'm working on putting a new deck railing on my deck.
Mm-hmm.
And as I squatted down to work on that, I realized
like
what caused the problem. And it was a position that I was holding myself in while I was squatted down. I say all of that to say this. If you're out there and you have some kind of a minor niggle, an injury, something that's giving you a hard time, sometimes it's not caused by the running.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it came up. I didn't hurt until I ran. It was the middle of that 30-miler that it started hurting. And I realized it at that point. But it wasn't the running.
The symptom showed up in the run, but the cause wasn't the run.
Right. Yeah. The actual cause was the other thing that I was doing. So I say that because a lot of times we think, well, we must be doing something wrong in our running that caused this problem. And in this case, it had nothing to do with my running. Mm-hmm. It just, the running exacerbated it.
Yeah. And to your point, you were doing something that you don't normally do. In fact, you said you were sitting in a weird position while you were staining the deck or whatever you're doing. And so it's a good idea to kind of think back. Mm-hmm. And go replicate that. And a lot of times, as soon as you do it, you'll be like, oh, that's what it is.
Yeah, I was doing something weird that I don't normally do.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, how about a post for this week? It came from Pat Park. Love Pat Park. Mm. So positive. He said this, when there is rain throughout the day's forecast, you have to hit the light rain gap. 2 rainy miles of walking to get this Thursday started. Truly refreshing, even if it was just a little wet. Finding blessing even in the rain. Grace be with you all.
Mm.
I love this. Finding a blessing even in the rain. Sometimes I think we want to find a blessing because of the rain,
sure.
Right? Because it's fun.
Yeah.
I love to go out in the rain sometimes and just And just think of myself as that 12-year-old kid that used to love to play in the rain when I was a kid. When I was a kid, we lived in this neighborhood. We lived in Florida, South Florida. And you know how rain is there. It'll just pour down for 10 minutes, and then the sun comes out. And it would, the neighborhood that we lived in this trailer park. And of course, in Florida, the water doesn't drain very fast either because of it's flat down there. And we would get these puddles in the streets that were deep. They were like, they seemed like they were a foot deep, probably 6 inches deep. It's just, I was little then.
Right.
And anyway, we would get these puddles, and I so wanted to play in those puddles. My mother never would let me. Because she was, she had.
Because you would have been playing in the street.
She was this old, now what the street thing wasn't a problem. She was of this old school thing of being wet will make you sick. Mm. Being wet and or cold will make you sick. And of course, it's not true. And I know I'm going to get some emails because somebody's going to, because I don't know why this persists today that people think that if you're cold and wet, it's going to make you sick. But people still think it today.
Sure.
You get sick because of germs, not because of, or viruses, not because of being cold and wet. otherwise, you get wet when you went swimming, right? So anyway, there are times to be careful in weather, but most of the time we can get our runs, our walks in. And this is a good example where he just went out there and did it. Now, if there had been lightning, he didn't need to be out there.
Right.
But a lot of times when there's lightning, we wait until the lightning goes away.
I had this conversation. I'm having deja vu. I had this conversation just, it seems like, in the past 2 weeks. And I said what I always tell people when they go out to run in the rain, because, you know, for some reason, people don't like it. I personally like it. You like it. But I say, when you walk out the door, you get out of your vehicle and it's raining, and you're going to start to run or walk or whatever you're doing, go find the biggest puddle and just jump right in.
Yeah.
Because it's exhausting to try to get out of your truck, and it's like you're trying to dodge water puddles when you're headed out for a 3 mile run and it's pouring down raining. It's futile.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and find, and it's kind of like that first scratch on your vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, you always hear people say when you buy a brand new vehicle, just go ahead and put a scratch on it.
Yeah.
And then you won't worry about it anymore. It's kind of like that.
It is. That's a good idea. Well, our trivia question from last week, we're going back to an old well. Name one odd thing that happened in the 1904 Summer Olympic Marathon. I just couldn't resist. I love this story. It's just one of the best running stories ever. And there are a number of odd things that happened in this particular race. So let's talk about it. The 1904 Summer Olympics in St. Louis took place on August 30th of that year, over a distance of 24 miles, 1,500 yards, about 40 kilometers. It proved to be a bizarre affair due to poor organization and officiating. The race was run during the hottest part of the day on dusty country roads with only two sources of water. So it was run at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in August in St. Louis.
And I've been in St. Louis in August.
Yeah, yeah. And the organizer decided they wanted to do some testing. They wanted to do some experimentation, and they wanted to resolve their hypothesis on purposeful dehydration. So they purposefully didn't put water out. The last water stop was at around 12 and a half miles. So, just crazy, crazy. Now, to be fair, this was only the third Olympic marathon ever. And so they didn't really know what to do, what to expect, kind of things like that. But there were 40 athletes entered in this. Only 14 managed to finish the race. Included the first two black Africans to compete in the Olympics, two Tswana men who happened to be in St. Louis as part of the South African exhibit at the 1904 World's Fair. So they had the Olympics and the World's Fair in the same place at the same time.
And they just happened to pick off two guys that were there for the World's Fair?
Yes.
To run the Olympic marathon?
Yes. Yeah. So, but both these guys had served as long distance runners during the Boer War. So they were accustomed to running long distances. So Now, at the start, it included five laps around a stadium track, and the remainder of the course was on dusty country roads with race officials riding in vehicles ahead and behind the runners. Of course, this created dust clouds because they didn't have paved roads back then, and that exacerbated the severely hot and humid conditions where the temperature was around 90 degrees at starting time. The course was also not cleared, so you had traffic. You had animals, you had railroad trains, delivery wagons, you had trolley cars, you had all this stuff that you had to dodge. During the race, John Lorden, who had won the 1903 Boston Marathon, was violently ill after 10 miles and retired, while Sam Miller, who had won the 1902 Boston Marathon, was also overcome by the dust. Despite leading the field at the halfway mark, Miller became disoriented and ultimately dropped out of the race after 14 and a half miles. Another near fatality during the event was William Garcia of the United States. He was found lying on the road along the marathon course, unconscious, with severe internal injuries that had been caused by breathing the clouds of dust kicked up by the race officials' cars. So the first person to arrive at the finish line 3 hours and 13 minutes after the start was Fred Lors. After being hailed as the winner, he had his photograph taken with Alice Roosevelt, the daughter of the President Theodore Roosevelt. She placed a wreath around his head and was about to award him the gold medal when spectators claimed that Lors had not run the whole race. So he had been suffering cramps, and he actually dropped out of the race after 9 miles. Then he hitched a ride back to the stadium in a car, and the car broke down. So he got back out of the car at 20 miles and finished the race and jogged across the finish line. And then, of course, he was confronted by the race officials, and he immediately admitted what had happened. And then he went through all this crazy stuff where they disqualified him from events after that. But then they reinstituted him. He won the 1905 Boston Marathon. Anyway, Thomas Hicks ended up as the winner of the event, but that didn't go without things going on there either. Although he was aided by various measures that would not have permitted in years later. It says 10 miles from the finish, Hicks led the race by a mile and a half, but he had to be restrained from stopping and lying down by his trainers. I'm just trying to picture that. From then until the end of the race, Hicks received several doses of, are you ready for this? Strychnine, a chemical that at the time was used as a performance enhancer. It was mixed with brandy and egg white. He continued the battle onwards, hallucinating, and was barely able to walk for most of the course. When he reached the stadium, his support team carried him over the line, holding him in the air while he shuffled his feet as if still running. Hicks had to be carried off the track on a stretcher, and he might have died in the stadium had he not been treated by four doctors. He lost 8 pounds during the course of the marathon. Cuban postman and Darren Carvajal had also joined the marathon, arriving at the last minute after losing all his money while gambling in New Orleans. He hitchhiked to St. Louis and had to run the event in street clothes that he cut off around the legs to make into shorts. Not having eaten in 40 hours, he saw a spectator eating two peaches. He asked if he could have the peaches, and the spectator declined. He then stole both peaches and ran away. Later, he stopped off at an orchard en route to eat some apples, which turned out to be rotten. The rotten apples caused him to have strong stomach cramps, and he had to lie down and take a nap. Despite his discomfort and his pause, Carvajal still managed to finish in fourth place. Arriving without correct documents, Albert Corey, a French immigrant to the United States, is inconsistently listed as a participant in a mixed team in the 4 mile team race. So we're not sure whether he ran it or not, I guess. And then the South African entrants that I mentioned earlier finished 9th and 12th, respectively. But that was a disappointment, as many observers were sure that one of these guys could have done better if he had not been chased nearly a mile off course by wild dogs.
You would think this is made up. I know it's true.
It does. It sounds like it, doesn't it? It sounds like somebody made some movie and some comedy. Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I remember this when you posted it. When you started talking about the kicking up dust, I'll never forget. And I think I probably said this in the last episode. The very first Run for God, we used to do a half marathon. We used to put on a half marathon. And the first year, I thought I was trying to think of cool things to do. And I've got a buddy, actually from right here in Cahutta, that has a Model T. And I thought, how cool would that be for that to be the lead car? And I'll never forget, help me with the guy's name that won that race.
Manuel
Farrar.
Yep.
Yeah. Manuel come through, finished first. I mean, we figured he was going to win. And he came through and I was congratulating. He said, and his English is pretty broken. He said, that Model T, the smoke. I couldn't hardly, and I hit me. You know, cars back then didn't have catalytic converters. Yeah. It was just straight exhaust going out. And he was running right behind the car the whole time. And so wasn't as crazy as this marathon, but it was pretty funny.
No, but I remember I was second that race.
Was you really?
Yes, I was second that race.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was way before you and I really started hanging out much.
It was. And that was the one where Lori, a mutual friend of ours, had she had an injury and couldn't run the race. So she said, do you want to run it? And I was like, well, I've got a race next week.
Yeah.
And I said, but, you know, I need a long run anyway. So I'll just run it kind of as a
hard
run.
Is Manuel still around?
I haven't seen him in years. So I don't know. But yeah, I remember. I could smell it. But I was 100 yards behind him.
Yeah.
I was a good ways behind him. Yeah. And I could smell it.
Yeah, it was a good idea, but it was a good thought. But we didn't do that again.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we are back. And don't forget about Thursday nights. We have this live thing every Thursday night. And you have a chance to ask questions. As a matter of fact, I figured out this past week how to get the response time faster on the live feed. So it's been like 10 or 15 seconds lag time. Now it's just a few seconds.
Really?
So now the interaction can be better. It's just a setting on YouTube Live.
Really?
Yeah, and I didn't realize it, and now I know, and now it's better.
Now you know.
So, it's pretty cool. Well, I got to thinking about it because there's a guy, a podcaster that I listen to who does his live, and he gets feedback, and it's like instant. And I thought, how does he do that? And I figured out that you can do that. So, pretty cool. So, join us on Thursday night, and we say this every week. We're going to share somebody's story here, but if you haven't submitted your story and you've thought about it, don't wait any longer. You might even stop this podcast and just pause it, write your story, and then come back to it.
Well, I mean, I have no doubt there's people listening to this podcast right now who are gearing up to join us at the end of April for the half marathon kickoff. Don't forget, I sound like a broken record here. We want to hear of somebody's story who hasn't started the challenge yet. We hear all kinds of great, incredible stories of people who have been through the challenges, but we want to hear from somebody who hasn't yet started.
Yes.
And then we want to hear their story at the end, because the vocabulary, the confidence, everything about those is drastically different. But we've never actually recorded it. We've done a lot of the end, and we've heard a lot of the beginning, but we want to contrast those two. So if you're out there and you're about to start either a 5K challenge, or maybe you're about to jump in the half marathon challenge that's finishing in St. Petersburg, go ahead and put your thoughts down. What are you feeling? What are you concerned about? What's intimidating? What stresses do you have leading into something? Maybe you've never run before, and that's causing you some doubt. go ahead and put those thoughts down and send that to us in a story format, and we'll get it on, and we'll get it on at the end of the journey.
Yeah.
We'll put your story on this podcast at the end of the journey, and we might even bounce back and forth with clips. That would be pretty cool.
I would love to go through and do that
yeah.
and put those two stories kind of sure. together. It would be fun to do.
Yeah, we can't write them for you. So if you're out there and you're about to do that, please get those thoughts down and send them to us.
For sure. This comes from Runner's World. This is interesting. As if it wasn't bad enough worrying about your neighbor besting your Strava segment, you now have to worry about your neighbor's golden retriever taking a title as well. Well, kind of. If you don't know what Strava is a it's an app mm-hmm. where you record your runs, and it's kind of a community. It's almost like a social media kind of thing where you share with others and other people can see your stuff. So that's what Strava is. Strava, the activity tracking app that runners love to hate, just announced a partnership with the smart dog collar brand, Fi. That allows the app to log a dog's distance traveled and number of steps taken, basically identical to how it logs your morning miles. Fi's collar functions like a GPS watch, offering built-in satellite positioning systems and basic health monitoring. But now with Strava integration, it's easy to get a visual representation of your dog's walk or game of fetch. According to Mateo Ortega, the company's vice president for connected partnerships, the app's new addition was born out of user demand. Strava data has shown that pets are a key motivator for many athletes in pursuing their goals, Ortega said in a press release. This partnership with Fi is a natural fit and a way for athletes to not only include their pets in their community, but get credit for all of their movement, including the daily dog walks. Strava's 2023 year-end sports trend report found that 76% of dog-loving athletes say their furry friends help them get out the door to exercise and find that working out with their pets is more fun. So we have this thing, and apparently it starts at about $3 a week for this subscription service. And that goes to Fi. Now, Strava is free. There's a free version of Strava and there's a paid version of Strava. You get a little bit more with the paid version. But it's kind of a cool thing. I can't imagine, particularly, you know, my dog, especially when she was younger, my goodness, she would run all over the place. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see a map of what she was doing.
Yeah, it's, people take the Strava stuff seriously.
Yeah.
We have a big community, the Run for God community, and I think I've said this on here before, but I've got to bring it up again. I've never really been a Strava person. You know, I log my stuff into Garmin, and I don't even really look at that much. But back in, gosh, this has probably been 7 or 8 years ago. I think I've told this story on here. Maybe I haven't. But I was on vacation, and I just happened to pull up. We have a local cycling group. It's called the Dalton Area Cyclists that I was part of. That's back when I was riding a lot. And I was on vacation, and I pulled up Facebook, and if you're mentioned in a post, it kind of pops up to the top of your feed. Well, I was getting blasted on social media, go figure. And I got to reading. I was like, what is going on? And it was talking about me cheating, and I was like, I haven't even done a race. What's going on here? And come to find out, the Crow Road, which is kind of the last sprint stage of the milkshake ride, that's the weekly ride around here, I had broken that Strava segment. And that was news to me because I'm not that fast of a cyclist.
Yeah.
And so somebody said that I had cheated to do it, that somebody saw me hanging on the side of a car. And I was like, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And I was like scratching my head, and I was like, okay, number one, I didn't even know I broke it. Number two, I don't hang off cars, period. Yeah. And as I was sitting there thinking about it, it hit me. I had just got done with a ride, or I was getting close to the end of a ride. And Keith Burnett, a friend of mine, pulled up beside me. And you probably shouldn't, but in cycling, if somebody pulls up beside you, you just stop pedaling. You kind of throw your arm up on their windshield. Well, I threw my arm up on his windshield or his door, and I was just riding along with him, and we were just talking.
Yeah.
I had no clue that I was breaking the Strava segment. And the I didn't even get on Strava. My Garmin automatically put it over to Strava.
Yeah.
And so I went on there. Now, number one, I was like, okay, you guys are all throwing me under the bus. You know me. You threw me under the bus, and you didn't even call me to ask me what was going on. But everybody got a big kick out of it.
Yeah.
But it was, there was a few lessons there. The biggest one being, I was getting thrown under the bus, and nobody had even reach out and ask me, you know, like I wanted to break a, anyway. So
I wish I would have thought about that story. We were in Sunday school class yesterday. We were talking about these kinds of things, about not knowing.
Misconceptions. What is that? Conjecture.
Conjecture. Yeah, that's a good, Wow. That's a great story.
I was upset, though.
I'm sure.
I was mostly upset before I realized what had actually happened, because I was like, they saw somebody else. This is false identity. I don't know.
Then you realize they really did see you.
Yeah, they really did see me, but I didn't realize what I was doing at the time.
That's good stuff. Well, last week we shared a great personal story about running the marathon in Mississippi from Michelle Mitchiff. Well, this week her training partner chimes in with her story. This is from Reagan Hope, and it's called My Marathon Testimony. Well, there's not much to tell whenever I'm compelled to share my testimony. No hairy tales of hellish days with the demons hanging all over me. I've never smoked dope, swore after the Pope, or called my mama ugly. I just came in bold when I was 6 years old and said, Jesus, I want you to save me. Well, there's also not much to tell whenever I'm compelled to share my running story. No weight loss tales, no fast PRs accomplished with my competitors running behind me. I've never won first place overall or been sponsored by a shoe brand. 10 years ago, I just put on my running shoes and said, Jesus, I want you to help me. You see, I was one of these people who said they hated running. I will never run or be a runner. You're crazy. I'll never run a marathon. I had not run since my junior high track and field days, but God, he has a funny sense of humor. He likes to take the least and the unqualified and turn it into the most for him. So I began my running journey 10 years ago in 2014. 10 years ago, I was working in the corporate world raising a family, and I only had time in my schedule for one friend, my best friend. Up to that point, she and I had spent 24 years hanging out together, just she and I and the kids as they came along. When I started this running journey, I would have never imagined what the running community would be like. I went from having one friend to having 10 best friends, running buddies, workout buddies, hangout buddies, and Saturday morning taco run buddies. We called ourselves the hashtag Run Chat Therapy Club. For every run, yoga session, or adventure I wanted to do, I had 1 to 10 friends that would show up. I learned quickly that for me, it was the running community that I loved more than the actual running. In early 2020, we started training to run a marathon. When we got to about mile 10 in our training program, I fell down a whole flight of stairs, rolled both ankles, and could not walk for a week. Then the pandemic happened, and you know the rest of that story. Late fall of 2020, this was the year we had been planning for so long for. This was the year my husband and I were picking up our Texas roots, leaving the kids and family behind, and moving to the beautiful mountains of North Carolina. No, not because of a job opportunity, nor did we have family there. We were moving just because we wanted to. So here we are in the mountains of Hayesville, North Carolina, population 400. You can bet my first thought was, I'm never going to find running buddies here. I knew of Run for God, and I knew if I was going to check a marathon off my bucket list, I needed a community, supporters, and cheerleaders to help me get to the finish line. But God, he's so good. In late 2022, God put Michelle Mitchiff in my path. All I had to say to her was that running a marathon was on my bucket list. Michelle said, count me in. So we started our training journey with the Run for God Couch to Marathon. Crossing the marathon finish line in Mississippi was a big accomplishment, and another bucket list item was checked off. However, the journey to the marathon was the greatest reward. I'm so blessed that God gave me Michelle, a running buddy and sister in Christ. I didn't care that our pace was different during training. I cherished our love for Christ, running, and being part of the Run for God community. As I mentioned earlier, for me, it's the running community that I love more than the actual running. Thank you to the Run for God community. Thanks to each of you for being a part of my daily journey and seeing me across the marathon finish line. All the hours I spent training, running, and talking with the Lord were the real fuel for my body and soul.
I mean, this is just another example of Michelle and Reagan. I mean, they're names we know.
Yeah.
We've seen them for so long now. And yeah, I mean, these are the stories we love to hear. This is, you know, I'll never forget thinking back to the fall of 2019 when we started thinking about this idea of Couch to Marathon.
Yeah.
Is it 2019?
No, I think it was 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were just like, will this even work? You know, is this feasible? And wow.
Yeah.
It is. And it has been. And she's so right. It's the journey is the best part of it. You know, the race is great. It's checking it off your bucket list. It's an accomplishment. It's incredible. But the journey along the way is where all the character's built, the discipline's built. You become a different person during that journey, and she's just an example of that.
Yeah. A couple of things I love about this. First, I love that Michelle and Reagan's stories, we happen to share them on back-to-back weeks. I think that's pretty cool. But, you know, this is the coolest thing about this story that I like is that she says that there's nothing special about her story, right? And you know, she's a Christian, has a relatively ordinary story, I guess you'd say, an ordinary running journey. It's nothing special in her eyes. However, there's somebody out there listening to this who's going, that's just like me.
Well, the first paragraph, I was starting to think she was, what's our funny guy's name?
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking they had to be related.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, the unofficial tagline of Run for God has become, there's more than running going on here.
Yeah.
And this is a good example of that right there, right?
Is it Jerry?
Jerry Snyder.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. We hear that over and over and over and over again, that the running, the races is a byproduct of what goes on here.
Yeah.
It's not the main thing that goes on here.
Absolutely. Psalms 16:11 says, "You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore." When I moved to North Carolina, I felt a little lost without all of my family, friends, and running buddies. But God, He gave me this verse. It's not about other people filling my love tank. He said, "In His presence is fullness of joy." It's a great comment. And if I've got this right, God sends this verse to her, ensuring that she understands that all she needs is God, right? Mm-hmm. And then once she kind of buys into that, Michelle shows up, right? I mean, how awesome is it to watch him kind of put all that stuff together, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder if she would have even noticed this verse, if not for the lack of direct local friends at that time. You know, it was it was the circumstances of wanting a running buddy, which was a relatively negative thing, right? You know, this idea of being without, and that led to this realization. Then God said, "Hey, way to internalize that verse that I sent you. Now, here's a friend to run with." I love the way that all goes together, don't you?
Yeah.
And this is where we all go. I can't help but think about the song "Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places." Sometimes we're looking for validation and things in the wrong places, and sometimes God will just come out of left field and bring us something. Or maybe that's just me and my slow brain. But that's the way it seems. 1 Corinthians 9:24. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. She goes on to say, what I learned from Run for God is to run for the right reason. It's not about me. It's about shining His light for others to see. Whatever race we are running in life, let's run it 100% and give God all the glory. Man, I love this sentiment and this viewpoint. You know, I teach a PE class at a local private school here in Cahutta, just a couple of days a week. And we had just finished playing a really fun game, right? It was one of these games that was just, we had a really good time doing it. And so I asked the group about Romans 12:1, which says, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. And so I asked them, I said, how is playing this fun game linked to this verse, right? Because it's just, we're just having fun. And I had some really good answers, some very specific answers, but the bottom line answer to the question could have been exactly what Reagan is saying here, right? Everything that we do is a sacrifice to Him. All of our activities should in some way deepen our relationship and our worship with God, right? I mean, that's just the way it should be. And of course, then she mentions giving 100%. And that's another key thing to this verse, right? Giving 100%. And I think sometimes we forget how important that is. And my mind went to Tim Tebow. Mm-hmm. You know, Tim Tebow, who was not the best quarterback by any stretch. Nobody in the world thought Tim Tebow was the best quarterback. But he was just a winner. But the reason why he was a winner was because Tim Tebow never gave up, ever. Under any circumstances would he give you, if you left any opening, you left just a crack in the door and he would go through it, right? And sure. That's the way we're to be with God, mm-hmm. right? We are to be 100%. I remember back when I was in high school, I played the best tennis player in our school and I beat him. You know, was I a better tennis player than him? Not even close. But you know what I could do? I could hustle and mm-hmm. I could go hard after every ball. And I did. And the only reason I beat him is because every time he let up just a hair, I got on him. And you know, that's what God wants from us. He wants us to never let up. He wants us to always be working and always be thinking about His kingdom and working towards His kingdom, right? Psalms 119:32 says, I will run the course of your commandments, for you shall enlarge my heart. She goes on to say, let's all run for God and run His course. If we do not run His course, we may be missing out on His blessings. Again, only He can fill our hearts. God has good things waiting for us, right? If we follow His plan for our lives, and it's not always easy. You know, this whole running a marathon thing, not easy,
sure,
but it's worth it. And that's in this part of the 119th Psalm is big, long Psalm. But in this section, he's saying, I implore you, God, to teach me your ways so I can go in the direction you want me to go. And, you know, it strikes me that it's easy to say that we're going to go in the direction God wants us to go. Mm-hmm. It's easy to say that. Are we really doing it, though?
Right? We just had this conversation yesterday morning in our Sunday school. We were in Mark 6, I believe, and it's where Jesus says, pick up your cross daily. And you're right. It's easy to say these things, mm-hmm. but if you really sit down and think about what that means, I mean, think about what the picture of picking up our cross is. Where did that lead Jesus? Mm-hmm. Led him to his death and ultimately his resurrection. But you're right. It's, you know, we say these things so many times, but we need to focus on not saying and more focus on the doing part of it because it's important.
Yeah, for sure. Question. Are you giving God your best? Are you running as hard as you know how? Run to Him. He is worth it. Hmm. That's convicting. I got to thinking about this from a running standpoint. How does this go together with like running, right? So if you think, I thought about this. We can't be, I mean, we literally can't be mentally 100% all out all the time in anything that we do, mm-hmm. right? And that includes our relationship with God. I mean, we're going to have those times. So I got to thinking about like training, right? When we're training, the training portion of our walk with Christ is it's the Bible study time. Mm-hmm. It's the prayer time. It's the time that we spend with Him trying to deepen that relationship that we have with Him. And then that person that God lays on your heart at the supermarket that you need to share with, that's the 5K, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
That's the time that you've prepared for this time to share Christ. And then sometimes we do things like we organize a neighborhood Bible study, maybe. Mm. That's a marathon. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. Teaching a Sunday school class, that's a marathon, right? And those are things we can't run a marathon every week.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because it got me thinking about one of our early 5K challenge classes. It was part of the community challenge where we had several churches together. And I'll never forget Heather Lyles made this point. She was talking about how, you know, the spiritual milk and meat. And so many times new believers, they want to jump right into that marathon, as your analogy says. And she talks about how important it is that new believers, that they do those small things first. Mm-hmm. You know, for a new believer, a Bible study on Esther from Beth Moore is probably not the best first thing to do as a new Christian. And you know, not that God can't bless whatever you do, but I like how she says in here, are you running as hard as you know how?
Yeah.
That kind of, to me, that kind of illustrates what we're talking about here. You are a much more accomplished and know much more about the sport of running than many people starting the 5K challenge. And for that reason, your threshold level is, or your...
The expectation
is higher. It's kind of like what the Bible says about, you know, people who are in ministry. They're held to a higher standard. And mm-hmm. and it's really that way in almost everything we do. It's not all about how fast can you do something or how good at you or something. It's really based on your knowledge of what that is how you should be judged on that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good stuff. Another question. This is not a question. Someone on this podcast said these words, and I may not say them correctly, but this is my takeaway. During running, try to breathe in Jesus, exhale the pain. I love that. Physical or mental, whatever pain you have, exhale it out.
I don't remember that. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. Yeah.
So that was you that said that?
No, it wasn't either one of us. It was in a story.
Oh, it was in a story.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It was in a story. Somebody had said it. Yep. And it goes to that, to a basic thing we talk about all the time, right? Our mind is really, really powerful. And when we focus on positive things, that pain will exhale out, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, Jesus is the positive thing.
Sure.
And we know that when we focus on positive things, we fill our mind with positive things and we try to do good things. And we know that from a physical sense, the pain is less, right?
Sure.
We know that it's the reason why people listen to music while they run is because they're taking their mind off of that pain mm-hmm. and putting it on something that feels more positive to them, right? So it's really important. And I don't know from a practical standpoint, I don't know if I've ever talked about this on here because it is kind of weird, but from a relaxation standpoint, I think being relaxed is really important, right? When we run, and it's also important when we think about our relationship with Christ too, because it should be natural. It should be a relaxing thing. It should make us feel better. And I remember when I was in high school, this is going to sound crazy probably to most people because I've told people this before and everybody looks at me like I've got three eyes when I say this. But back when I was in high school and maybe even occasionally today, but mostly I just remember this one particular time in high school. Whenever I think about being relaxed while I'm running, what I try to do, I try to picture myself being so relaxed that the meat on my arms are hanging from.
I've heard you explain that to the kids before.
And it, that's how, that makes me feel relaxed to picture myself being that loose. And, so it's a weird thing, but
I've always tried to not engage any muscle in my face.
That's a good one too.
If you can imagine every muscle in your face hanging, it kind of does the same purpose.
Yeah. But we do these tricks mm-hmm. to try to figure out how do we relax more when we're running, because obviously the run is better.
Sure.
Well, from a spiritual standpoint, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
On the spiritual side, we have to, when we just feel that Jesus, you know, when we can feel like we're breathing him in, it deepens that relationship. Mm-hmm. It makes it better. Last question. Can you imagine when you hear the host of heaven singing and Jesus welcomes us home? Run to cross the finish line. Make sure you run for the right reason. Be in it to win it. I like that. I can't help but think about the announcer at the Ironman events.
Well, when I read this question, I thought about that even before I saw your note. Mike Riley's his name.
Yeah.
But somebody had, you know, he's retired now.
Yeah.
And there was a special on something here a while back, and somebody posted it on Facebook, and it was asking people about their Mike Riley moment. And I got the cool honor of hearing it twice. You know, he's the guy that says, "You are an Iron Man."
Yeah.
And I got to hear that twice from him. But yeah, I mean, that was incredible. But well done, good and faithful servant. That's Mike Riley on steroids right there.
That's right.
And
that's what we're all striving for.
It is, yeah.
It is so hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually, too. For pennies a day, Upward Sports Run for God Run Club can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join the Run for God Run Club and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to runforgod.com and sign up today.
All right, we're back. And you know, it's happening again. We have another story about a child running long distances and people are freaking out. Remember the story about the six-year-old back, I guess it's been a couple of years ago, when he ran a marathon. He was 6 years old. He ran a marathon. The story, if you haven't heard the story and don't know the story, he begged his parents to run this marathon. He had several brothers and sisters. They all ran. And he just wanted to be part of the family event and run this marathon. And they were like, "No, you don't need to run it." And they tried to talk him out of it. And the kid just insisted he wanted to run it. And they're like, "You don't understand how hard this is going to be." And he's like, "Oh, no, I know. And I promise you, I will finish it. And I'll do that." Anyway, they went through this. And one of the parents lagged back and just ran with him. And at about 20 miles, the six-year-old wanted to drop out of the race. He wasn't injured or anything like that. But they did a video where they said, "Hey, if you'll get to the finish line, we'll buy you this," whatever it was. I don't remember what the prize was. But they put that on social media, and it went crazy. And people went nuts about how they were abusing this child, mm-hmm. not understanding the backstory of the child. They understood running. Yes, conjecture. They understood running, and they understood they weren't harming this child, because they knew what it meant to be in real distress, you know, as a runner. And they were trying to teach this kid a lesson, because he had said, "I promise I'll finish it." Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they tried to say, "No, this is too hard." And mm-hmm. he's like, "No, I can do it." At that point in time, I think the parents did the right thing by following through. Now, would I have let my six-year-old run the marathon to start with? I don't know. We do have a problem with parents saying no these days. Mm-hmm. But that's a whole different story, right? At that point, I think what they did was fine. Anyway, I say all that to say this, because now we've got this news story. well, of course, the lesson we learned from the first story is not don't let a 6-year-old run a marathon. It was don't post stuff on social media that are controversial. That's just dumb. But anyway, we fast forward to now, and there's a 12-year-old girl that just ran a sub-3-hour marathon. And she wants to go for the 12-year-old record, the any gender record. She wants to beat the guy's record. Mm-hmm. And as you would expect, the world is melting down. Her name is Evan Kim. And the article that I read said that she runs 7 days a week. Now, again, for a lot of people, that's like, I can't believe these parents are forcing their child to run 7 days a week. But we don't know that. It sounds
think,
to me
think
like.
Think back. This is how times have changed.
Yeah.
I wish my parents would have stuck a Garmin watch on me when I was between 8 and 12 years old. I grew up 8 miles down the road. How far is Highland Forest from here? Yes, 7-8 miles?
Maybe the most.
I mean, there were many days I was all the way up here on my bike.
Yep.
And on foot and fishing. I mean, I would like to know how many miles I covered on foot.
Yeah.
Just being a kid.
Yep.
I don't have any studies to back this up. I struggle with the whole marathon thing with kids. Mm-hmm. For the reason of, I feel like many times we're setting them up for failure, not because like the boy that wanted to drop out. You know, as a parent, that's probably not going to. I mean, I was worried about Landon doing it, and he was, what, how was he, 16, 15? 17,
yeah.
16.
Yeah.
It wasn't because I was afraid he was going to get injured. I don't. Are there any studies out there that shows that it's physically harming?
Not that I know of.
To a kid?
Not that I
know. I mean, I wouldn't think it's any more dangerous than it is for me or you to run a marathon.
Right.
We can get injured probably more easily than a kid can. Yeah, I don't know. This stuff that plays out on social media just.
Well, this one is not a social media. They haven't posted all this on social media. She just happens to be really good. And so that's why this one has garnered so much attention. But
I'm sure the naysayers are playing out on social media.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You know, I follow the Let's Run message boards a lot. And, you know, they've melted down on there. And it just amazes me how many professional people there are there that know 100% everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just so knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the girl, if she wants to do it, then I say, let her do, especially at 12 years old and 6 years old are two different things to me. I don't know that I would let my 6-year-old do it. I would let my 12-year-old do it. If my 12-year-old wanted to train 7 days a week to run a marathon, I would totally let him or her do that.
I mean, I remember, I know there were these conversations going on about me and Lane when Lane was younger. I know that these conversations, but people didn't understand. I mean, I had both sides in my household.
Yep.
I had Lane and Landon. Landon, I had to kind of push, and I realized, you know, he's not really into this, and so I backed off. And we had these conversations every single year, and Lane would get mad at me.
Yeah.
I would ask Lane in January of every year, Lane, is this really what you really want to do? Why are you even asking me this? Lane was self-driven. It was all Lane wanting to do these things. And so, yeah, unless you're behind in the side of those four walls of that house, we don't know. And so we shouldn't be casting judgment on these situations.
Well, and the other thing I can't help but think about here is I remember a time when I was really young, they said women couldn't run marathons,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
That they couldn't handle it.
Sure.
And so, yeah, maybe this is the same thing, right? That, you know, it's, again, I don't know if I like the idea of kids doing long endurance things,
mm-hmm.
but if they want to do it, and I don't see anything wrong with letting them do it. So, anyway, say all that to say it
but
is.
But what's colored this conversation is there are those that are living vicariously.
There are.
Through their kids. And there that's are. That's what's colored this conversation.
That's right.
Because there are those that you look at and you're like, we've coached them.
Yep.
I mean, we've. you sit down and you have an honest conversation with some of these kids and you're like, I don't really want to do this.
Right.
And that's where it makes it hard. And it's all that much more. It's why we as the general public need to kind of pull back from there. I mean, it's we don't know what's going on inside the house. So it's really not our place to jump in and say.
That's right.
Insert our opinion into this because it's really not a place for opinion.
Well, it's especially rich in this day and time when we're doing other things to kids that are really seriously
we're
bad.
Not going to go down there.
All right. It's a time for Dean's thoughts.
You were stepping up to that soapbox.
That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, I have a great question to pose. It may change the way you look at running. It may change the way you look at faith. It's called a burning question. I have a question burning in my heart. But before I ask it, let me give some background information. According to archaeological studies, we have discovered that the idea of exercise being good medicine goes all the way back to the Tridosa Doctrine, written between 1500 and 800 BCE. That seems to be the first time it was officially recognized that good health and physical activity go together. It came from a region in India known as the Indus Valley. Dr. Susruto, from this region and in about 600 BCE, is the first known doctor to have prescribed exercise as medicine. He said, "Diseases fly from the presence of a person habituated to regular physical exercise." That was almost 3,000 years ago. As we travel through time, this link between exercise and health has cropped up again and again. Massage and exercise were actually being performed in China as early as 2600 BCE to heal the sick, and a Chinese physician named Hua Tou prescribed exercise because he knew it was good for us around 200 BCE. He said, "The body needs exercise only it must not be to the point of exhaustion, for exercise expels the bad air in the system, promotes free circulation of the blood, and prevents sickness." Wrong reason, but right track. Even Hippocrates himself, the father of scientific medicine, advocated for exercise as medicine for what ails us. The Hippocratic Oath is still used today to direct doctors in the ethical treatments they should use. The original oath cited diet as a treatment for healing. Today, we know that poor diet leads to bad health outcomes, and a good diet leads to a healthier life. I could go on and cite doctor after doctor over the ensuing millennia, but suffice it to say that we can fill in all that time between Hippocrates and Dr. Phil with quote after quote about how exercise and good diet leads to a healthier life. I won't bore you with them, but this is where my burning question comes in. How long do we have to know something before we conform to that knowledge? How much evidence do we need before we take care of ourselves and improve our exercise and diet habits? There is no question about the efficacy of good diet and exercise. To be sure, there are people who argue that exercise is not really all that good for you and that exercise equipment manufacturing marketing people have convinced you of something that is not true. But as I mentioned, the knowledge that exercise is good for us predates exercise equipment or Gatorade, the waffle trainer, and even those silly looking things that look like long bowling pins from the 1800s. We know it. Exercise is good for us. Running is good for us. Walking vigorously is good for us. So why is it so hard to do something that we have known for almost 3,000 years is good for us? Isn't that a good question to ask yourself the next time you're struggling to put on your running shoes? Of course, we can ask the same thing about the message of the cross. Jesus died for our sins about 2,000 years ago. His message then is still the message today. He willingly allowed himself to be placed on a torture device and suffered and ultimately died so that we could be with God forever. He did that for you and for me. He did that for everyone. And the only thing we have to do is believe that message, the same message that has been around for 2,000 years. So let's review. There are two things that we have known for 2,000 plus years. They're both good for us. They will both lead to a better life, a richer life, a more fulfilling life, and neither of them is hard to understand. I ask the burning question again. How long do we have to know something before we conform to that knowledge? Years ago, a man by the name of J. Warner Wallace was a devout atheist and homicide detective. He undertook a project to disprove the Bible using the same principles he applied to solving cold case murder cases. His journey led him to the realization that all the evidence points toward Jesus being exactly who he said he was. If you're one of those who do not believe Jesus was who he says he is, I invite you to read the book Cold Case Christianity to see J. Warner Wallace's work. And if you applied those same tactics to finding the true efficacy for running or walking 3 to 5 times a week for an hour at a time, you'd find it's good for you. So again, why would we not apply knowledge with over 2,000 years of backup proof? It would be crazy to ignore all of that. The question today is, what are you doing? What are you going to do the next time you don't feel like getting out the door? The more important question is, what are you doing with Christ today?
It's a great story, Dean.
Yeah, we've seen this story a few times, right? Mm-hmm. Lee Strobel, I think, is probably the most famous one. You know, he was a journalist, and so that's probably why his story came to be so widely known. But, you know, he was an atheist, and he was convinced that there was no such thing as God, that was a silly fable.
Yeah.
And he was set out to disprove it. And now he's one of the strongest Christians you'll find anywhere on the planet because he dug deep to find all he could to disprove it. And he couldn't find anything because it's not there.
You know, our marketing team here at Upward just got, I think they just wrapped up a video shoot with J. Warner Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing a new gospel video, and he's the one kind of narrating it. So that's
very cool
tie-in here. Yeah.
That's neat. Well, did you know that doctors have been prescribing exercise as medicine for that long?
I mean, I don't guess I knew that specifically, but I think I knew that we've known it for a long time.
For a long time. Yeah. I knew competition had been around for a long time, but, you know, Hippocrates, it's funny, you know, people ask how I come up with these topics sometimes. You know, I came up with this one. I woke up in the middle of the night and on the television was they said something about Hippocrates being the father of something. It was some kind of a thing where they were talking about how he knew that exercise was good for us. Hmm. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. So I wrote a little note and I went back to sleep.
Sure.
The next morning I investigated and this is what I found. Hmm. So Hippocrates, he was the one who is credited with developing this theory of the four humors. You ever heard this? The there were four things that influenced our body, and it was blood, yellow bile, black bile, and phlegm. And those were the things that
So is Hippocrates, I guess that's where the Hippocratic Oath came from.
Right.
I mean, Hippocratic, basically, it's do no harm, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot longer than that.
Yeah, but that's
what
it
is.
The gist of it, do no harm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he didn't have the details right back then, but he knew.
He's on the right track.
He could see the correlations, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things. I don't know an example right now, but there's things we know today that we know it's good for you. And somebody says, well, explain it. And you're like, I really can't explain it. But it's good for you.
But
we
know
it's good
for
you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why do we know? Why do we have these things that we know are good for us and we don't do them?
That's the age old. I mean, I think that has something to do with the fall of man, I guess, because, I mean, to not sin, we know that's good for us. We know that in every instance sin is bad, yet we do it. It kind of goes back to Paul's struggle. You know, he doesn't do the things that he knows he wants to do, and he does the things that he knows he doesn't want to do.
True.
That's been a struggle ever since the fall of man.
Yeah.
But we'll never explain. I don't think we'll ever explain it.
Yeah. And we tend to justify.
Sure. Yeah.
Why we don't do things. You know, I used to justify why I ate crystals 3 times a week. And
and drink a case of Diet Coke.
I mean, truthfully, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, it's we do that because that's what we like.
And it was hard to argue with you. Because, I mean, you were running 239 marathon and
right.
3 pounds of crystals a week and a case of Diet Coke. So it was hard to argue, but it's like, and I think you even knew. I think deep down you probably thought, okay, this may not be the best, but I'm running a 239 marathon, so
Well, and I think that's no different than, because you're probably right, although I would have said no.
Yeah, at the time. I know you would have said, you did say no.
But it's the, I think it's the same thing with our faith. I think there, I think people know that God exists. I think deep down,
but
everybody knows it.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And they just won't admit it. Even these devout atheists who are so gung-ho to tear down Christianity,
right.
I think they know it. Mm-hmm. But they're just like me arguing that, well, I just ran a 239 marathon, so it must be okay.
That's a weird parallel, Dean.
But it is kind of the same thing, though, right?
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share running and walking tips each day, as well as encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be a Run Club member for access to this exciting challenge. So, if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for?
All right, we're back, and every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome, and this week it is... It helps develop your patience, which is good for me because
well,
I need it.
Our patience must have been pretty bad before we started running.
Must have been. Well, think about it. You know, during a 20-mile run, patience is really important.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah,
I ran a 30-mile run 2 days ago. Patience was super, super important.
Sure.
But because you just want to get out there and get it done, and you can't just get it done.
Right.
It takes time to do it. So if you're going to go out there and you're going to run or walk a marathon, a half marathon, however far you're going to go, you got to practice patience. So if you can learn to be basically uncomfortable constantly for 4.5 hours or whatever distance, you got to have some patience.
Lane used to make the comment. He said, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
It's learned. It's a learned thing, but it still doesn't make it comfortable.
That's right.
Usually when you learn things, it gets comfortable.
That's true, but
running,
not in this case.
Running is not that way.
That is true. So it helps you with their patience. Well, anybody out there fans of Jakob Ingebrigtsen? He's the guy who...
Is he the one that's kind of cocky? And
He's determined to make himself the best runner in the world ever. And of course, what's interesting is you got another guy, Josh Kerr, who wants to do the same thing, and they're running the same race. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But anyway, Amazon is putting out a new documentary series chronicling that family, which should be interesting. Jakob's wife is expecting in June. So that's going to be part of the series. So that kind of adds for those of you who like those kinds of things. That's an interesting thing. I just found out there are 5 seasons worth of Ingebrigtsen documentary films that are available on YouTube.
Have you watched any of them?
I started to watch one. I just haven't had the time, but I'd like to go back and watch them. You got to really pay attention because you have to read the subtitles because they're in. It's Norwegian,
mm-hmm.
So you really got to focus on it. But it's I think it should be interesting, and I would love, you know, the Ingebrigtsens are full of drama. You know, he's got 2 other brothers who are professional runners who are nearly as good as he. Yeah, he's got 2 older brothers that were both. Olympians, and then he comes along and he's showing them up basically, but definitely an interesting family, and I would love to watch that. So, and then a thing happened this weekend. They had a race this weekend called the 10. So it's just called the 10. It's a 10K race on the track where they try to get a bunch of really good athletes in. The field was amazing. It was crazy good. Like, they had 7 guys who ran under 27 minutes.
Wow.
We had never had a single...
How many people were in the race?
39.
On the track at the same time?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a crowded field.
Yes. And probably...
That's hard to keep up with.
Yeah. There were probably 25 that broke 28 minutes. I mean, it was unbelievable.
What is it, 25 laps?
Yeah, 25 laps. There were... There were 0 people who had ever broken 27 on U.S. soil prior to this race.
Where was it at?
It was in California.
Wow.
So pretty cool. And Grant Fisher was the one that won. So that was pretty cool. Seeing Grant Fisher win that thing was.
So was there kind of an unspoken thing that if you were being lapped, were you to get on the second or third lanes, or was it?
No,
kind
they
of
were
a
going around.
Fall?
They really? Were going around them. Yeah, there were wow. there were some that moved out, but most of them they were going around them. And then also Nico Young set the collegiate record. He was second in this race. He ran 26:52, I think it was. So, yeah.
It's insane.
Crazy good. Insane. But here's the worst part about it, though. I mean, it was a good race. It was great and all. So, I stay up. This race wasn't on until 12:30, basically Sunday morning. And so, I stayed up because they had a live track where you could see each lap as they were running it. I wasn't going to pay the subscription fee to watch it. But I was going to kind of keep up with each lap. And their timing system didn't work. So it worked for about the first six laps. So I'm really getting into it for these first six laps. I'm analyzing each lap as it goes by. And then the next one posts, you know, and then it quit working.
Wow.
God, I was so disappointed. All right. How about a trivia question for this week? I think this could lead to some interesting discussion. Define the word carbohydrate. You know, it's a word that we vilify a lot of times. I think it would be good to discuss. A lot of times I do these trivia questions because it's something I want to discuss. This mm-hmm. is kind of one of those.
Sure.
So if you know the answer to the question, define the word carbohydrate, send that to dean@runforgod.com. Be the first one, and you will win $20 off in the Run for God store. How about a motivational thought of the week? It comes from Mother Teresa. She said, "Kind words can be short and easy to speak, but their echoes are truly endless."
Hmm.
Isn't that great? Yeah. It's not hard to say kind things, is it? It's just not. Even about 12-year-old marathoners. but we're so focused. We had this discussion this week about in our Sunday school class about tearing mm-hmm. people down. And how I told my class, I can prove to everybody in this class that everybody in here enjoys tearing people down. People are looking at me like, I don't enjoy tearing people down. I said, I can do it with one word. And they were like, you got to be crazy. I gave them one word and they all looked at me like, oh, you're right. I won't give that word on here, but it was it was a political affiliation. I'll just say that.
Mm.
And we need to get along.
Sure.
We need to get along. We need to talk with people who we don't agree with, and we need to all get along.
Just love each other. We talked about that last night in a deacon's meeting that, you know, how will the world know that we're Christians? It's not by the things we say. It's not even really by the things we do.
Yep.
It's how we love.
That's right.
That's how people know we're Christian.
Bottom line. That's right.
Well, Dean, 209 episodes down. This episode next week, new studio
next week. Yeah,
we're going to start breaking things down as soon as we get off here, and hopefully I don't hurt my back, and because we got some heavy stuff around here. But thanks to everybody for listening. 209 episodes down. Gosh, I'm so thankful.
Absolutely.
For everybody listening and for this club and this ministry, and I'm ready for the next 209.
I went back and figured that we probably have about 20,000 times that the podcast has been viewed on YouTube. So if you add that to the 100,000, it's about 120,000 times
that
people have watched or listened to us. And that's crazy to me.
It is. It's humbling.
It really is. And thank you so much. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.